Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of American Criminal. In our latest season, the child of Italian immigrants sets out to achieve the American dream. And if he has to spill some blood along the way, so be it. Listen to American Criminal, Al Capone, wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get ad-free access to the entire season first, subscribe at IntoHistory.com.
Welcome to the OC Bitches.
Welcome to the OC Bitches.
Season 2, Episode 1.
And look where we are, you guys.
Oh, yeah.
If you're watching, and if you're listening, we'll make a great description. We are, we're on a great set, but it looks like the Cohen backyard, doesn't it?
Yeah, sure does. Yeah. We're just hanging out by a pool by the ocean. I don't know about you, but this is the first episode of our second season.
Can you believe we did one whole season?
No, because it was 27 episodes. Yeah. And like when we shot the episodes, it took forever and, you know, and it was a lot. Mm-hmm. And we just finished doing every single episode for this podcast.
It made me think about this actual schedule. And for those of you who might not know, when you shoot a television show, especially if you're doing 22, which is normal for mm-hmm. network television, 27 is not normal. Mm-hmm. You start in July, and usually you're done by March, April. Mm-hmm. And then you have May, June off and start up again in July. And with 27 episodes, I have a feeling, I think Josh said when we spoke to him that he had only a couple weeks off. We may have only had maybe a month off. So do you remember what you were doing during hiatus? I had to think about this.
Yeah, but that's a rhetorical question for you. If I remember what I did on hiatus. not the first hiatus. I feel like, oh no.
This was the first
hiatus. I do remember.
Good. Yay.
I went to Hawaii with my family and Adam actually came with us.
Uh-huh.
And we had to leave early because my grandmother died.
Oh.
Yep. Real uplifting podcast for y'all today.
Oh.
It's okay.
That's okay.
That was my first hiatus.
I know. Well, I just remember that I was moving into a new home right down the street from Notre Dame there in Sherman Oaks. Huh,
where I went to high school.
I think we were all getting new homes right about that time.
Probably.
Yeah.
I think so. I commented on this and I forget why, but yeah, I was living with my best friend Leah still mm-hmm. behind the Hollywood Bowl in our condo. Oh, I know why I talked about this, but it's not until the next episode. So you're just going to have to listen next time.
Okay.
But yeah. I think houses and traveling and whatnot. I remember Adam teaching my 2-year-old sister at the time how to surf in the pool in Hawaii.
Gosh, was she only 2 then?
Yes, she was 2.
Oh,
she is now 19 in college in Ireland.
Gosh. Right, because she's just a few years younger than CG.
Right.
Oh, I love that.
Yep.
Oh, everyone's growing up.
Yes, that is our little catch up for everyone out there. But we're really excited. So it's just Melinda and I today.
Yes, just us. We've spent so much time exploring the show, the impact, this amazing, amazing first season. And I thought it, you know, let's just get into the episodes this time. Oh, but there was something else that I do remember being very aware of at the time while we were shooting. And I wanted to bring it up because we are into the second season. And, you know, people like to talk about or discuss, you know, the ratings of a show. Josh talked about that, you know, criticism, all those kinds of things. And we will talk about those kinds of things. But, you know, guys, for the second season, for the first season, we were on Wednesday nights following American Idol. Great. You know, both shows did really, really well. Second season, as a vote of confidence to the show, Fox moved us against, like, it was must-see TV. So there was Survivor on, there was Joey, there was Will and Grace.
Right.
And it was the best that Fox had done in that time slot, but we lost overall like 30% of the viewers on Thursdays. And we remained there until I think around the fourth season. They tried us back on Wednesday night and then moved us again. When you move a show that many times, it kind of handicaps the show because it's just definitely kind of dilutes the audience. So I just wanted to say that, you know, that this was, you know, it's not, I actually really love this season. I love all the seasons. I know some people have favorites, but I love this season. First of all, because I think the writing for Summer mm-hmm. and Julie in particular got to be so much more fun. And we get to see, and of course they have to, you know, we have to break up our core four. So it brings a lot of conflict. This is a drama after all.
Right.
And you in particular had some really great things. And
I was actually surprised as we are starting to watch the second season that, yeah, I had a lot more to do, I guess, you know, acting wise. But it's kind of fun to see. And I'm excited to watch along with everybody. I'm going to talk about the synopsis for this episode. So we're, you know, the first episode back after the break. The Coens' house is in a state of disarray, both with the renovations and with Seth gone. Having traveled to Portland to stay with Luke, Kirsten is fed up and wants Sandy to bring him home. Ryan tries to adjust to his life back in Chino, but is struggling. Summer and Marissa try to forget their ex-boyfriends, and Kayla becomes increasingly paranoid about what the DA has on him and his business. It was directed by Ian Toynton, written by Josh Schwartz, and it aired November 4th. 2004.
It also had it attracted 8.6 million viewers, which is pretty good. Very good.
Yeah, of course. I guess nowadays, like Josh was saying, it's a different thing because all the streaming and whatnot. But yeah, thanks for watching back then if you did.
So I also think that this episode really, it's almost like it's part of season one. It kind of finishes out season one.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. Okay. Yeah. For sure.
Right.
And this episode opens on, you know, the Coen house in disarray. It's a construction site. But is it a construction site? Because every single construction worker there does not have a shirt on. And let me tell you, does not have a shirt on, but also looks like could be, you know, a strip club employee or
Thunder Down Under.
I mean, seriously, these men are in very good shape and they are shirtless and they are all shirtless, and that is just, the mind boggles.
I know. I wrote that it was a bizarre choice to have the shirtless men. So, you know, but I do feel, and in fact, I don't have exactly the details, but I'm pretty sure on this. Josh decided he didn't like the set, and they wanted to expand the set. So how do they do that? They write in this very funny storyline that obviously can have multiple meetings, you know, number one, that it's symbolic of the chaos that is going on in the Coen home because Seth and Ryan are gone and it's a really hot summer and they've got, I mean, I don't think it's even legal for construction zone guys to not be wearing hats and shirts and things like that.
Yeah, you're probably right there. But my favorite thing was the general contractor, you know, the main guy.
Archie.
He, you know, Sandy's like, how much longer? And he's like, 2 weeks. And immediately when he says 2 weeks, I automatically go to the money pit, which that movie still holds up. But I always laugh because everything is always 2 weeks in construction.
And then, of course, 6 weeks tops, which means 6 months.
Months. Yep. Yeah. So it's a really funny opening to the episode, even though, you know, Kirsten's obviously a mess and everything else going on.
Yeah, I don't want to get on. Kelly's a strong woman. This reminds me of like if you got on the bad side of Kelly, Kelly would be like this. But Kirsten, it's an interesting thing because they get into it. Obviously, they're upset. Seth is gone. Where is Seth? Like, where is he? We have no idea. But obviously, he might not be in danger. We don't know. But when she's saying, I'm having enough of your hippy-dippy parenting psychobabble. But, you know, Sandy said something that really I thought was cold. He said, well, you've been so overprotective. You've kept Seth from even having a friend. So when they start, like, hurling insults.
Parents are stressed. And when you're stressed, you take it out on the other. I mean, I think, right? That's kind of how it goes.
Yeah.
And then we are at Marissa's house, which is your house, if you can even call that a house. I mean, it's a crazy mansion.
The resort itself. Which is a beautiful shot, by the way. It's a pretty iconic shot of that pool and you two in your bikinis, which kind of reminds me back to the beginning. It's like the pilot. You girls are now back to laying by the, you know, in your bikinis, by the pool, sipping, well, what we find come to find out is Newport Beach iced tea.
Yes.
But I think what's interesting is, so you both have had the same thing happen. Your men, the loves in your lives have left. but you're both dealing with it in a slightly different way.
Yeah, which, yes, you know, the girls are talking it out, and Summer really lets her feelings be known. She can't even remember Seth's name, I believe, is one of her rants. And, you know, Marissa just seems very kind of aloof and distant from it all.
Well, and I have to be honest, I'm really glad because Summer says, you know, she spent all this time crying, but I'm glad we didn't see them crying.
Yeah.
That they've moved on.
We got to skip over that.
And Summer is, she's showing growth. She's trying to move on. And then Marissa, on the other hand, is drinking again.
Yep.
And that's, she's dealing with it in that way.
Yes.
And even Summer kind of looks at her quizzically like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And then she says this thing, because, you know, I mean this in the least scandalous way, you're looking a little thin, which was kind of an in on the joke thing because, yeah, people in the industry, the media, comment on actors' weight, and it's just horrendous.
Well, it's all, you know, every part of an actor's exterior or what you see, like it's just what people like to comment on, you know, and I think it's pretty unfair and you have to have pretty thick skin, but it's gonna get in there, mm-hmm. you know? But yeah, no, Misha was always very healthy in real life, you know?
Totally.
Yeah.
She's 17 years old and it's just, and this is an example of what we were talking about, how, because I found this, review. I was just looking up things mm-hmm. about the second season, and this is just a short thing. It said that in the second season, they were introducing teen lesbianism to spice things up and chipping away at the perfect 20-year marriage of Sandy and Kirsten. It still fulfills its remit of optical junk food, but like its female stars, the storylines are starting to look malnourished. Not only is this person mm-hmm. writing about the compare, you know, mm-hmm. for some reason didn't like some of the storylines, but they have to throw in the actors, you know, appearances.
Yeah.
Which was, I guess, that time.
And sometimes I just want to turn it on people and be like, mm-hmm. let me just write an article just solely on how you look and see how that makes you feel.
Right. Right.
You know, or just talk about you. It's a hard thing, but, you know, you have to learn to ignore it, which hopefully right. we all have. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't think it would fly today, and I hope it wouldn't fly, but that was, anyway, I thought that was an interesting thing, but
yeah.
But it
we is. We also, like, yeah. learn a couple other things in this scene with Marissa, and Summer, we learn that Summer has a new guy mm-hmm. in her life, and we also see the yard guy, who is shirtless. There's a theme here. No one works with shirts on. Mm-hmm. It's not allowed in the OC. I don't know if you knew that. So we see the yard guy. Summer has a dude. A lot of information.
Nicholas Gonzalez, by the way, is a
plays the yard guy.
Beautiful man, and you guys might. He's gone on to a wonderful career. We will talk about him more later. See, I can't even talk sometimes.
Yes,
it's like, oh.
Okay, so we leave the girls, and now Teresa. We see Teresa and Ryan. They're together.
Okay, we have to talk about this scene.
What?
It's awesome. It is so awesomely fucking awkward. And
oh yeah,
but Ryan, okay, she's dropping him off at another construction
work. So yeah. He has a job at a construction site, right, and Teresa is dropping him off, and you know they really want you to see how domesticated but also awkward the two of them are at this point, you know.
Right
She hands him his little paper bag lunch
and says, what,
I peel the orange.
Now there's nothing more emasculating than, I mean, actually, think about this. At first I thought, so what's the big deal? And on my drive here, I started thinking about that orange. And I thought, have you ever seen a really, I don't know, just a man peeling an orange? Half the fun is peeling the orange, and it could be kind of a cool, sexy thing. I just started picturing it.
I have to say, Mindy, I've never thought, like, damn, I wish that guy would peel an orange.
Well, think about it. Think about him opening up his bag and pulling out the plastic baggie with the peeled
orange. Oh, yeah, it's perfect. By the way, the insert shot of the orange peeled is like the most perfect like pulp-free
I know.
Orange sitting in this bag, which is pretty funny. But yeah, no, my favorite thing, I think my favorite takeaway, Mindy, is now I will look for any man peeling an orange and see if I'm turned on.
Well, especially in a wife beater. And by the way, the way Ben is looking in scene.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like Ben disheveled, like hair not done, 5 o'clock scruffy. Shadow scruffy. I was like, this is the first time I find myself attracted to Ben. I never knew. But like, what? I'm watching this and I'm like, oh, hey.
I got to say, this is good. This theme will be recurring in these next few episodes lot. We're going to say
I'm
going
to talk more about how I think Ben's hot, but we'll get there later. Yeah. Okay. What's next?
So then we get to, we're at Caleb and Julie's house. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you about, if you remember, Julie had this bright orange hair, and at one point it looked kind of like a tiger, and it was really hard to maintain. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I had extensions. If you remember those, you didn't get extensions, but we had extensions. And over the summer, I was like, okay, so I didn't want to be that bright red because it was just so hard mm-hmm. to maintain. So mm-hmm. I went to the darker red, I hope. But I figured that it was kind of like Julie was like, new house, new do.
Oh, yeah.
You know, totally.
Yes.
So.
Agreed.
This is hysterical. Caleb, paranoid about the flower truck, and does she hear any clicking? And she's like, okay, Nixon, you know, you must be hyped up on blow. Something seriously wrong. And then, of course...
25 years ago, Carrie Bradshaw started posing a slew of honest, provocative, relatable questions to the modern woman in her fictional column, Sex and the City. And just like her, the singles and hopeless romantics of New York still want to know, can you change a man? What constitutes cheating? And can you be friends with your ex? I'm Tara Llewellyn. You may know me from Gilmore to Say, a Gilmore Girls podcast. And after 10 years of navigating dating, friendships, career shifts, heartbreak, and of course, love in New York as Carrie did, I couldn't help but wonder, how relevant is Carrie's column 25 years later? Join me as I revisit this beloved series with some of my favorite New Yorkers and closest friends as we commiserate on first dates, one-night stands, love lost, friendship breakups, and everything in between. To bring Carrie's column to life and answer her questions from each episode of Sex and the City through a modern lens in my new weekly podcast, And Just Like Her.
She says she's getting Caitlin a new pony, and he's like, what's wrong with China? China has alopecia.
Yeah.
And don't put it on the company card. And that trigger why?
Yeah. Yeah. You see it all written all over you. You were like, oh, fuck, not again.
Okay. No problem.
Yep. Yeah. So. And then he's like, it's not a write-off. And you're like, okay. And then, so then we go to Kirsten calls Seth. This is where the audience learns where Seth is. Mm-hmm. He is with Luke in Portland.
Right. First of all, now we get to see scruffy Luke, who looks amazing too.
There's a lot of scruff in right? this episode, and it's working for all of them. I'm just going to put it out there.
Right. So Carson, like at first I was like, who's Carson?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Me too.
And he's like, hey, Mrs. Cohen. And we get to see Luke again, wonderful Chris Carmack. And we see that Seth is just sitting there playing some games. And he said, you know, my mom, blonde, sharp, Anglican features, cute little nose. Mm-hmm. But he's like, I'm never coming back.
Right.
And it's really sad. So we know he's safe. You know, he's just at Camp Luke for the summer.
Right.
It's not like he's 17 years old, right?
Yeah. And he took a mini catamaran thing up there.
Somehow he got there.
Somehow he got all the way up to Portland.
But then he hangs up on his mom. Like, he's being a real asshole.
Seth can be a real little spoiled brat, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Just gonna...
But then Sandy says, you know, he is turning into one angry young man, mm-hmm. which, beware, teenagers have they're supposed to do
teen
that.
Teen angst. Yeah. They didn't come up with that term for no reason.
He's got a lot of teen angst.
His middle name is Ezekiel, which we learned.
I know. I guess that's the first time we learned that.
Seth Ezekiel Cohen.
Well, right. No wonder he wants to get out of Newport.
Yeah. So then Jimmy shows up. Asking if they, Kirsten and Sandy are going to come to dinner with him and Haley on his boat.
And Tate looks extra Margaritaville.
Listen, Tate looks hot.
Yeah.
Tate is scruffy. Tate looks hot. I'm telling you, this should have been called Hot Men Scruff. I don't know. Right. There's just a lot of good things happening for these men in this
episode. I feel like the dads actually, they just get it, you know? I don't know. But Jimmy and Sandy are similar, mm-hmm. but But I feel like, you know, he's like, oh, you know, you can't do that. Because if you bring him back, if you force him to come back, he's just going to leave again. Has to, at some point, and this is actually, we can talk about this more, but this is, there's a point where you, as a parent, you might want them to do something, but you can't just say you have to do it. You've got to make it, make them think it was their idea.
You have to manipulate them.
Totally.
Master manipulation is how you can be a good parent.
Right. But Tate suggests that maybe he'll talk to Ryan.
Right.
Okay.
So this scene, Sandy goes to talk to Ryan to try to convince him. Now, this was the actual scene where I'm like, okay, I'm in love with Ben. Because in this scene, I never thought he looked better.
And like, he's smiling.
Anytime Ben smiles, it melts my heart.
Oh,
yeah. He looks so good. But yeah, this scene where he goes and tries to convince Ryan to come up to Portland. He hands him a ticket to come to Portland to try to convince Seth to come home.
He's got all these reasons why he couldn't do it. But he
doesn't. By the way, the level of adulting that Ryan is doing, like in this episode, and how he and Teresa are, I'm just like, dude, these kids are in high school. Imagine having to work, you know, a job at a construction site, which is a good job. That's like a decent living, you know? But getting up every day and like taking care of the lady and, you know, in that regard, I mean, ladies can take care of themselves. I'm not saying they can't. But in this episode, you know, it's showing how he's taking care of Teresa. And I'm just shocked that they're in high school.
Well, and of course, as his guardian, and that I thought about that. I'm like, what about the court system? Is he allowed to do this? But Sandy has allowed him because of that speech in the last episode of I'm going to do the right thing. And Josh talked about a lot about fate. This is my fate. I have to do this. I would do this because this is what you would do, Mr. Cohen. So he's kind of in support of this, which is it makes for good television, peeps. It gets a little frustrating. But I do have to say there's something really when Ryan walks outside and talking about that in high school and he envisions his younger self.
Yeah.
First of all, well, I think he's actually looking at it and saying, man, I lost my youth, or I'm thinking of the boy that I lost. And of course, the boy, this is just a side note, he's dressed in a wife beater. But for some reason, it's inside out and you can see the Hanes on the back of the shirt. And I was like, was that on purpose, or did the kid go, hey, I'm going to wear it? Somehow it got by that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I just noticed that they, same thing. So it was like super obvious. Like this is Ryan seeing himself as his younger self.
His lost childhood.
Yes.
Well, the other thing that's going on is, you know, Caleb is very paranoid and they have to meet in this garage. And it's kind of funny. And Sandy, I love Sandy's just having so much fun going, come on. But of course, as we know, it's kind of vague and something's going on.
Yeah.
Something's going on.
We'll find out eventually.
Yeah.
Then we're back in Portland. Seth is drawing a comic and, you know, it looks a little bit like summer.
So he's an artist. Yep. We're finding out. But I thought about that. I was like, he actually painted Marissa's room back when you guys painted.
Supposedly he did the mural. Is that right?
Right. Because I was like, all of a sudden.
He painted Paris. Yeah, sure. So he's an artist.
He's an artist. Okay.
And then Luke and two girls come in, you know, and it's obvious like they've all been hanging all summer and whatever. I noticed that girl walked up to Seth, put her arm around his, and I was like, what's going on here?
Right. Well, but it, you know what? I looked at it and I was thinking about, you know, his argument of how much he hates Newport. And we're establishing that he's not suffering in Portland. In fact, he's not an outcast. He's got friends. He's easygoing. It's chill. It's kind of idyllic. And he's actually found that in Portland.
Right.
And whereas in Newport, for some reason, and I guess you could, I guess my question was, it's the same wherever you go in the world. But being new, you can reinvent yourself.
Sure.
So I don't know. I'm trying to.
A lot of people move for that reason, I think, you know?
Yeah.
New start, new life. But so we're still in Portland, and then Sandy arrives because Sandy is going up to try to convince Seth to come home. And, you know, I was very conflicted with Seth and how he's kind of handling everything. And it's like, well, you let Ryan go. And it's a little like, it just bothered me a little bit. Just like, come on, Seth, like, grab your balls. Like, just you're putting everything on Ryan and Ryan being there. And he's not there. You can't be there. And I do understand that he did bring him in and made him feel more accepted, included. You know, his life got a lot better with Ryan. And I totally get that. But he's being not cool to his parents.
I know. It's a very interesting thing because it's good to see both sides. Well, first of all, sitting down with Luke and his dad to dinner. Mm-hmm. Have you ever gone to known somebody, you know, socially, and then all of a sudden the domestic fight breaks out in front of you and it can be pretty awkward, but they didn't, you know, they didn't flinch. At it.
They were just like, Carson and Luke are just sitting there.
Sandy's trying to be polite.
Yeah.
And I actually really love Adam's acting choices because he's not being a snot. He's being a snot, but he's doing it kind of subtle.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh, yeah, no. But there is a point in a teenager's life where they come up with an incredibly strong, I know better than you argument. And regardless of whether it's right or wrong, their dedication to that belief is very strong. And parents, if you're a good parent and you try not to take it personally, that's when you think, okay, is this a teaching moment? I'm going to step back, let them work through it. They're supposed to be going through these things. And Sandy steps up and says, no, you're being a spoiled little brat. And he's like, you can't tell me, spend your whole life complaining about it and expect me to be there. But that argument of you're not 18.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know. He had some good things to say, but I think ultimately Sandy's like, there's something else going on here. It's not just Ryan.
Yeah.
It's not just Newport. He just needs to, he's going through something.
Yeah. As most teenagers do.
Anyway.
Well, then we see Marissa on the beach alone, drinking, and she calls Ryan, you know, on her little flip phone. And Ryan's asleep in bed with Teresa, the high schooler doing the adulting. And it was really sad, you know?
Yeah.
Neither one of them speak, but it's unspoken. They know who's on the other.
They know.
Yeah, they know who's on the other end.
Because it's like, I was thinking about this. It's a relationship that didn't end because they weren't in love.
Right.
It ended because of these circumstances. And also, we find out a little bit later that Kirsten says, do you talk?
Right.
Or have you talked to Ryan? She said, we tried. Yeah. So it was established that they tried.
They tried to stay in contact, but it was too hard.
Right.
But yeah.
This was a pretty Eastern Glow, the album Leaf plays at the end. It was a pretty powerful moment.
It got me.
Yeah.
Not hard to do, but definitely got me. And you're right. When relationships end for other reasons, you know, other than you're not in love anymore, you don't love the person, that's the hardest.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the hardest ones to get past and get through. And it takes time. And it's hard.
Plus, visually, it's stunning. And Misha's with her hair blowing.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah, gorgeous. That was a real moment there.
Hey, you know, the scene, so when Sandy's actually leaving.
Yeah.
This was one of my favorite moments for some reason when he says, Carson, father.
Mm-hmm.
And when Sandy, this is exactly what we're talking about. He goes, you know what? I thought about what you said. I'm going to back your play. And so it's like, oh, this is a Jedi mind trick.
Yeah.
And he's sorry you had to come up here. And Peter goes, hey, it was worth it just to see ya.
Yeah.
Like, hey, Pops. You're like, it was just the sweetest delivery. And I mean, in the back of his mind, he's like, I'm going to let it go.
Yeah.
I did my best. He'll come home eventually.
Yeah.
It's not, but it was so sweet.
Very sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're back at Teresa's house and, you know, Ryan and Teresa are in the kitchen in the morning and he forgets that she had a doctor's appointment. I mean, he's going with her to every doctor's appointment. That's a real stand-up guy. Like,
it's so interesting because, you know, when she asked about it, and at one point she was like, oh, you could go to Newport. And then it went now all of a sudden.
To Portland, you mean?
Newport. Yeah, to Portland. Because now she's like, oh, now you're going to go and what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
This back. And so she's being, it's not like she's flip-flopping, but ultimately she's trying to figure out Teresa's a smart cookie. She's trying to figure out what's going on with him.
Right.
Because she knows things aren't well or going that great between them.
Yeah. Well, you know, and Ryan even says, I left Newport to make life easier for everyone.
Which was kind of a ballsy thing to say.
And she's like, oh, I you know, that's funny because I thought you left to be with me. And I was like, ooh.
Well, and it's like, it's okay. So then I thought, well, on Ryan's side, I left Newport to make life easier for everyone, you included Teresa.
Right.
Come on.
Yeah. I do have moments, you know, before we get to the, you know, further into the episode, I did have moments with Teresa. I was like, come on, dude.
Me too.
Like, okay, come on.
Yeah, she does some interesting things here. But did you, I didn't have people go with me to every appointment.
I don't think I did. I mean, if anything, you know, Briar's dad was there for the, like, but not every appointment is like an ultrasound or like, you know what I mean? So it's kind of just like, oh, they look in your vagina and you're okay. And that's that.
If you didn't know that piece of info, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. It's quite invasive and lovely. Yeah, but I don't know. He was there for the important ones, you know? But well, I'm not sure about every single appointment.
Wait, I've been to every one. Are you saying I don't care? He's right.
He is right. He's going way above and beyond.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Way above and
beyond. But it's not even about that. She's saying what's going on. So she knows stuff is going on.
Yes.
But then when it's like, well, I owe it to him, and she says, why? So just on the day before, she was being supportive, and all of a sudden she's questioning him. And because she knows he's getting pulled back in.
Yes. Next scene, though.
This is quite a famous scene.
Let's talk about it.
I remember reading the script on this.
Mm-hmm.
And loving the scene. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, we're questioning what's going on with Marissa. And you're reading the script. You really want to know what's going on with me. She starts screaming this blood curdling
scream.
Yeah,
so Julie and Marissa are outside at the pool at the mansion. Yep. And you confront Marissa because you really want to know, like, what is up?
What's going on? You know, and you're grounded and all this stuff. Anyway, so she lets out this intense scream to kind of let us and Julie know what's really going on in her mind. I was there. I thought Misha did an amazing job. First of all, though, I thought it was pretty funny. Julie and Kayla would have like really expensive teak furniture, but they got the lightest stuff that was possible from, you know.
It would have been really funny if it was extra heavy and she couldn't actually get it into the pool.
She's dragging it.
No, but that's a hard thing to ask any actor to do. Mm-hmm. You know, you read that and you're like, you just have to have the craziest, you know, most passionate, enraged scream come out of you. And that's not easy to do.
It's not. And it's interesting because for some reason this has become, unintentionally, it's become an infamous scene and the scream. And people use the scream over. But I...
On Valentine's Day 1929, a group of gangsters was massacred in a cold Chicago garage. The crime shook the country, and even though investigators had only just started looking for answers, everyone was sure they already knew who was behind the crime. Al Capone. Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of the new true crime history podcast, American Criminal. We take you inside the minds of some of our most notorious felons and outlaws, exploring the dark side to the American dream. In our latest season, a child of Italian immigrants sets out to make good on the promises of that dream. But Al Capone's path to success doesn't take him down the straight and narrow. Instead, he transforms himself from a smarter-than-your-average thug into the most infamous criminal America has ever known. Listen to American Criminal Al Capone wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get early ad-free access to the entire season first, plus hundreds of other ad-free history podcast episodes, subscribe at IntoHistory.com.
My reaction was honest. And I don't know that it, for some reason, it didn't land. For some people thought it was funny, but I played it for real. Like, that was a little bit crazy.
Well, definitely crazy.
Yeah.
And my reaction to it was, like, she does the first scream, and I instantly thought of that moment in Princess Bride when the man in black is being tortured in the pit of despair, and his scream echoes throughout all of the land. Right. Like, that's instantly what I went to, with her just like,
It is. She's the princess in the fairy tale. Who's? I mean, I thought the intention was absolutely there, and I thought it worked well, especially on the day. It was very, I remember that day. Anyway, so back in Portland, Sandy leaves and Ryan arrives. Thank you.
Yes, so happy for that. But thank goodness.
But then,
yes,
I do want to say that when Summer comes to the Cohen house, mm-hmm. and first of all, you're in your Camp Beverly Hills. Does everyone remember that? You're wearing that tank top.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was like the biggest thing. But this is the beginning of Summer's wisdom. This is where they start writing, because
they're
this
like,
is
actually, oh, Summer actually has depth. Let me show you.
And she's trying to get over. She's not throwing pool furniture, and she's not drinking. She's
definitely not throwing pool furniture yet. Yeah. But she brings all of Seth's crap over, and she's like, my therapist said to get over it, I have to get rid of all of his things.
Do you meditate? I've started to try to get into, it's one of the hardest things. I can't sit still for a massage, put it that way.
Okay, yeah, I hear you. My mom's an avid meditator my whole life, you know, and I definitely try. And when I'm really going through a hard time, I lean into that a little harder, and it does help. And I actually find the Calm app is very helping, because guided meditations are easier for me than just doing it on my own. Mm-hmm. So I do turn to that, especially in times of need. But it is helpful, and I could relate to this with Summer. But she references, "Excuse Me, Your Life is Waiting" by Lynn Grabhorn. Now, I don't remember this. I guess it came out at the time.
It came out in 2000, and it was an instant hit.
Okay.
I definitely looked it up, but it's definitely, you know.
I like the message. You know, positivity is a choice, which is true.
Totally.
You know,
you're
in control of your mindset and your thoughts, and you can tell yourself whatever story you want to tell yourself, and you're in control of making that positive or negative.
And the vibrations around you and the vibrations of the people around you.
Right.
It can be, and one of the things, finding peace in this chaotic world, that's never going to change.
No.
That ever. Is a superpower.
Right. I agree.
And Summer's on that path.
She is on
so
that path.
So she's becoming, as we'll soon find, I think the character with the most wisdom. Well, she and Sandy, but she becomes kind of.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
Okay, so let's go back to Portland.
Yes.
Because now Ryan is there.
How awesome was it to hear Luke's, "What's up, Gino?"
Yeah.
That was probably the last time we got to hear it, but.
Yeah, Luke really, we really.
The golden retriever.
The golden, that Luke's a golden retriever. Yeah, that's so true. Pretty cute and so true. But yeah, so, you know, Ryan shows up. Seth is very surprised to see Ryan, but it's sweet because he's also very happy to see Ryan, the love of his life. And
Ryan plays it pretty cool. Like, hey,
he
man.
He does. Yeah.
Hey, man.
Yeah. They're very, like, you know, nonchalant. What's up, bro?
Yeah.
So Ryan tries to apologize, but Seth is like, it's not your fault.
And, you did not make me leave.
Right. Right. And Seth implies he's not going back to Newport unless Ryan does.
He's like, are you going to go back? He's like, are you?
Right.
He's like, not if you're not. Then he's like, I can't. He said, no, I can't either.
Yeah.
Hey, there was something that he said, because he actually said, me and the OC are a truly beatable combination. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever heard any character call it the OC on the show.
Really?
So if anybody, you guys out there, if the characters ever say the OC.
Refer to it as the OC.
Somebody was saying on Arrested Development, whenever one of the characters would say the OC, Jason Bateman's character would say, don't call it that. But I don't think we would call it that. So, but yeah, he's maintaining his position, not going back.
Right.
And I've lost Summer forever.
Yeah.
And yeah, so.
Summer feels the same way.
And Ryan's not there to kind of, I don't know. He knows Seth. He's not.
He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
He might as well be the parent manipulating.
Right.
Okay.
Oh, okay. So just really quick.
Yeah.
So Julie, I like, this is kind of I remember this. It's the beginning of something with Julie and Jimmy. Mm-hmm. It's a really sweet scene. We haven't seen them nice together.
Yeah, it's cute. And he calls you Jules or Juju.
Jules.
He uses a nickname. It was Jules. Yeah. Yeah, it seems like, oh, you see the familiarity and like the comfort.
Yeah, and they're joking, like, yeah. How's what's her name? And he's like, fantastic. He says fantastic again. And and limber. And she's like, yeah, Caleb, not so limber.
You have some good zingers, I gotta say.
And then Julie says that Marissa is Keith Moon and Chucky. Like, well, yeah. Julie's got some funny ones
in
there.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. I still have those pants.
You do?
I was going to wear them.
You should.
Those cream pants. I should, if I remember that I have a pair of pants, I should wear them for the podcast, for the episode.
Just any pants would be good, Mindy. She comes pantless often. No, I'm just kidding.
Pantless. anyway.
All right, so back to Portland. The guys, they're playing video games. Luke's the same. But here, Ryan gets a call from Teresa.
This is such a questionable thing for a human being to do, but go ahead.
On so many levels. Yeah. But I'm watching it, and as I'm watching, like the audience, she calls to say this, and I'm like, oh, fuck, she lost the baby? So she calls him to say she lost the baby.
Yeah.
And Ryan's reaction, like, you know, this is a huge thing, first of all.
He says, I'll come right home.
Right,
and she says, no, this is a sign, don't come home. And he takes her on her word that she doesn't want him around.
Right.
And
he's like, okay.
Yeah, which is kind of an odd thing. He doesn't really push it. But I mean he's in New
Portland. It speaks volumes. Yeah. Like, you know, he doesn't really want to be there.
Right.
But he was doing the right thing. And so he goes into the bedroom and Seth joins him, you know.
Yeah, to give check him a little support.
Him. Yeah. And then we see Teresa's mom come into the room where Teresa is. And asks her, did he believe you?
And she's in on this thing.
She is, because I think she loves Ryan. And I think she sees that for both of them, what's best is she's going to help her daughter.
Yeah.
They don't know if it's Ryan's baby. This is just my take on it. And she loves Ryan and she wants them to both have a chance, you know.
Yeah, you know what? I thought about that. Ultimately, Teresa is in love with Ryan.
Yes.
And we find out in this episode,
I understand. He looks great.
And they're not, and she, it's not reciprocated. But
no. He loves her. Loves her.
He's gonna be there for her, but she's thinking to herself, he's not happy. So I'm going to sacrifice what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And what she wants is happiness as well. But
Her
plan is so flawed. There are so many
ways that
Ryan can find out.
Well, hello, she's going to have a baby. It's kind of hard to hide that.
There's people in Chino that could say, hey, Ryan, just so you know. I don't know. But this is a way to get him back. So, but Ryan goes... So Ryan says he's homeless again. And
yes.
I wrote, for some reason, he seems kind of nonchalant here.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess that's just Ryan's way.
Sure. And, you know, he's explaining to Seth that he's not going to come to Portland. He has a job that pays well. And Ryan takes off at this point.
With the great music, All the Arms Around You by Halloween Alaska.
Right.
I like that.
Yep.
That and feeling.
Both boys are considering their decisions. Then you see Seth run out to get Ryan, who is already at the door.
Yay.
Yep. And they decide to go back to Newport.
Yeah,
because, well, the show wouldn't really exist if they didn't. But
yeah.
Thank goodness they both come to it at the same exact time. They're on their way.
Back at the Cohen
construction site.
Construction site and some Mushu... Pork, Kirsten and Sandy are still not getting along. And Kirsten's still giving the stink eye.
Right.
But
the boys...
Enter.
Thank God.
And all is right in the OC world.
Yeah.
Yay. All is right in the world.
Yes.
Kelly was so cute. You're back. Yes.
Yeah.
Everything's going to be okay.
Ryan returns to the pool house and Seth follows.
This is a funny
Ryan
one.
Closes the door on Seth.
On Seth. Bam.
I laughed out loud.
I wonder if that happened.
I feel it looked like Adam did that, you know, just his reaction to the door.
They did it in, my guess is they did it in rehearsal.
Yeah, and it was funny. And
yeah, and so they kept it in.
That's
yeah.
what it looked like to me.
Yeah.
We'll have to check on that. But my favorite part is how, you know, they're sitting on the bed and the truth comes out how Seth actually got to Portland.
How'd you actually get to Portland?
I sailed to Catalina. Then I sailed to Santa Barbara and I ran out of snacks. That's like, yes, this is all tracking.
Right.
So I bought a ticket. And I took a bus.
A bus. Don't say it like that. Have you ever been one?
Yeah.
On one. It's local.
Yes.
Like, but it, there is so, you know, people. This is why it's a water cooler show. People talk about it at the water cooler going, he couldn't sail to Catalina or Tahiti. Well, and to be honest, the crossing to Catalina is actually one of the most dangerous passages on the planet.
Is it? Because it I is seen very people, dangerous. There's like a thing now you can do where you take a jet ski or a Sea-Doo, whatever you want to call it, a wave runner, to Catalina.
Yeah.
It's like an excursion and I want to do it. I'm like, that looks so fun. But like, will you die?
There are, I mean, it's there have been some pretty epic disasters. I mean, you can do it.
So do you know like
it
why
it has
it's
to do with
so
currents.
Treacherous?
And okay. Yeah, there's currents and I don't have.
There's whales. At times.
Yeah, that's true. There's superpods, actually the most superpods in the world out there. Specifically in Orange County, there's an 8 square mile protected area and it has the biggest dolphin superpods in the world. And the wildlife has
come
back.
Little known fact.
In. Yeah. But once again, I do have a friend who has kayaked all the way out there. So it can be done, especially.
It has to probably be done only at certain times of the year.
It can
or certain,
be very, very, very dangerous.
Okay. So him, I still want to do it. But
him by himself can be done, but not telling anyone is
not a good idea.
Yeah. So we're glad that
Seth's
safe.
Alive and well.
Yay!
And cracking jokes and they're improvising on the bed and all of that good stuff.
Right. Because it's like he wants it to be like Castaway or Mermaid or you know, anyway.
Right.
Well, any guys, that first episode kind of feels like it finishes out the first season for me because now we're back and we get to actually start into that second season.
Yes, and I'm excited. I can't wait even for the next episode because the boys are back. The boys are back in town.
Yeah. And wait, so did you – oh, and by the way, this particular episode I found – it's on the list of the top 10 of all the series for
really?
A lot of people. I found it highly satisfying.
Yeah.
I think when it's focused, I think the OC is at its best when it focuses on the Coen family.
I think
this is what
it was a really well written episode, mm-hmm. Well acted episode. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Good. For your first time seeing it.
For my first time ever seeing it.
Any surprises?
Always. Everything is a surprise. But yeah, that was so much fun. I think we have some voicemails for us,
yes.
Which is a treat.
Yes, we asked our listeners to ask us anything.
Oh, God.
And
here it comes.
We'll see how this goes. Are you ready?
I guess so.
Hi, this is Kai from Germany. I've got a question for both of you. Looking back, is there another role in the OC you would have liked to play? And if yes, which one and why? Thanks for your great work. Now I'll try to find the second season of Heart of Dixie here in Germany. Wish me luck. Goodbye.
That's so cute. Aw, thanks for that.
I love
hearing when we reach like Germany or whatever. Even Heart of Dixie. Awesome. I actually have an answer to this.
Okay.
So one of my best friends, Olivia.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, early 20s, we're all auditioning for all of these roles. And I've probably said this before, but anyway, she had an audition for a role of Marissa on a show called The OC. And I was helping her with it and reading it with her. And I remember being like, oh, man, I want to audition for that. I want to play that role
mm-hmm.
for Marissa. And it turned out that I got sent summer. Probably Patrick Rush, our beloved casting director. Mm-hmm. And I went in for summer and the whole time I was like, I wish I could be reading for Marissa. And Olivia, my friend at the time, was like, no, summer's the role. Like, I want that role. You know, we both wanted the opposite one. And anyway, we all know how it turned out. But yes, in the beginning, I was like, I would love to play Marissa.
As I'm thinking about this, my knee-jerk reaction is playing summer.
Interesting.
Because, but that's after knowing
right.
that what he started writing. But Josh wrote to you mm-hmm. and specifically to you. I auditioned for Kirsten as well. I wanted Kirsten.
Oh, how funny.
But I just think that we ended up with the characters we're supposed to end up with.
Absolutely.
Actually, I wanted to be Sandy. Get my eyebrows.
Yeah.
Anyway, there you go.
Hi, Melinda and Rachel. My name is Joni. I'm from Manila. I'm such a huge fan of the show. I really love the soundtrack of the series. But my question is, other than Adam and Rachel dating back then, did anyone else date anybody inside the cast? Thanks. Bye.
Tate and Peter had a bromance going.
Yeah, I was married. Not to my knowledge. I don't think it's funny. I remember this. There was a funny rumor about Kelly and Ben, but they were just friends. They just remember.
They definitely never.
They didn't date. But people love to think that there was some kind of. But I think you guys were the only. I feel like there were romances behind the scenes on with our crew for sure.
Oh, for sure. I think one of our. I think someone married someone in our crew.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
That happened, yeah.
I mean, I know they did, but I won't say just in case they want that private. I don't know. Right. But yeah, I think Adam wanted to date Olivia Wilde while we were together, but everyone wanted to date Olivia. So
yeah,
there's that.
Yeah. I had crushes, but no, just kidding.
But thanks for your question.
Thank you.
Hi, Rachel and Melinda. My name is Hannah Garner, and I am from Bridgeport, West Virginia. Huge fan of The OC. My favorite show ever. I watch it at least two or three times over in a year. So anyways, my question is for both of you. I was wondering if you both could identify a favorite memory that you have with Misha Barton, either filming on The OC or just a personal memory that you associate with Misha. I would really appreciate it. Thank you guys again for doing this. Bye-bye.
Thanks for that. Do you want to go first?
I have one well, first of all, we had so much fun working together. But you know what the thing that popped into my head? I had a birthday party at a bar in Hollywood, right in Hollywood. And Misha came to my birthday party. It was a private party, so she was loud. But I remember being like, oh, thanks for coming to my birthday party. But you know what also popped into my head? Do you remember when the three of us went to, I feel like we went together to a Chanel event
in Anaheim? At South Coast Plaza.
Oh, South Coast Plaza. That's what it was.
In the OC.
Yeah.
I do remember that.
That was fun.
A few of my best friends were with us, Johnny and Leah. And I think Nicole was there too, probably. Chavez, who was.
And we all dressed up.
Yeah. There's pictures from that.
I didn't get invited along to all the Chanels and the Dior mm-hmm. things. And in that particular time, they let us dress up in Chanel and go to that event. That was fun.
That was fun.
Oh, and actually, her 18th birthday at Koi, I remember.
Oh my gosh.
We sat around. Everybody came. It was a girl's birthday.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was I there?
Yeah. Samira was there. Actually.
I vaguely remember that.
Lindsay Lohan showed up.
Yeah, they were friends.
Yeah, yeah.
They were friends back.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Yeah, we had fun.
The memory I have that popped into my head. So Misha, one of our hiatuses, had done a movie with Hayden Christensen, who I happen to know. And they worked in Italy together. And I remember Misha and I going out one night. We went to the Roosevelt Hotel. And there was like a party going on in one of the hotel rooms. And Misha grabs my arm and she's like, she's like, oh my God, Hayden's here. And I was like, huh, what? Like just oblivious, you know? And she like walks up to him and I'm standing there and they're like talking and he's like looking at me and hasn't been introduced. And she was like, oh, sorry. This is my co-star, Rachel, you know? And I was like, hey, and I met him. And that was the first time met Hayden.
Oh, wow.
Misha introduced me. And that was obviously well before working with him or anything else, but she was the one to introduce me to Hayden. And she was like, oh my God, Hayden's here. and I was like, what's happening? But yeah,
you guys used to giggle on set quite a bit.
We had a lot of fun together working together. We had a lot of fun times for sure. Always laughing. We'd get slap happy.
Yeah.
But yes, a lot of fond memories. But yeah, she was the first person to introduce me to Hayden.
Hi, Rachel and Mindy. My name is Amanda. I'm a huge fan of the show. And I just wanted to ask you guys if you remember any funny or cool stories from being recognized from the show for the first time. So yeah, thank you. Love you guys.
This reminded me of something. Hey, Rachel, did you know I grew up in Orange County?
Nope.
Well, let me tell you. Anyway, there's something called the Pageant of the Masters in Laguna Beach. And it's where they recreate art life-size, like three-dimensional. It might be the Last Supper by Da Vinci, and it's humans recreating it on stage in an amphitheater. Anyway, that's beside the point. I was there with CG. She was like 5 years old, and my husband, Ernie, CG's dad, was sitting behind me, and for some reason, somebody was talking about me, and he said, "Oh, well, that's my wife." And she said, "You're married to Julie Cooper? How's that?" As if it was like not.
Like, oh, like you're Julie Cooper. Yeah. That's funny.
How's that?
Gosh, I don't remember for me, but, you know, Adam and I, since we were together at the time, going around was probably easier to spot because the couple on the show were together in real life too, I guess. But I don't remember the first time getting recognized. I think Adam talked about us being followed to San Diego by paparazzi once, which is, you know, a commitment. It's a couple hours away. But yeah, I can't remember like a time.
I remember something funny, and because it's hard to be specific about the time, but I went out with you guys, speaking of the Roosevelt, and we started at your house in the Hollywood Dell, and it was Nicole didn't like the outfit you were wearing. And we went to,
shocking.
We went to Teddy's, and she was like, she was protecting you because the paparazzi was following us down the street for you, not for me. But she's like, "I am not letting them take a picture with you in this outfit."
What was I wearing?
I don't know, but it was something kind of like, it was some like shorts or kind of a, some kind of tunic or something that she didn't approve of.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
I was like, people don't chase me. They seriously don't. They definitely would chase you.
Not now. That's funny. Thanks for that question.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Brittany Robinson, and I just want to say I have really been enjoying your podcast. Oh. I am a teacher / mom with a lot of stress, and I have found that your podcast really helps me decompress a little bit. Oh. So thank you for doing this, and that's I have great. Really enjoyed it. This question is to both of you. What is the most common misconception people have about you? And I basically want to give you guys a chance to set the record straight. Thanks. Hope you guys are having a great day.
Aw. First of all, teacher and a mom, I totally get it. And awesome. Like, you are incredible. Just keep doing what you're doing. But yeah, no, that's so sweet what you said about the podcast. Thank you.
That's why we're doing this.
Yeah, exactly.
Put a smile on your face. Decompress. It's all good. We're going to meditate together.
Yeah.
Let's go.
I need it. You know, the one thing I can say, because I don't know about now, but I remember at the time playing Summer, you know, and Julie, they both were perceived a certain way, especially the first season. And I remember how important it was to me to overcompensate and show people like that I'm actually nice in real life. Mm-hmm. And I remember doing that, you know, the event we talk about so much, the first viewing party where all the fans showed up and we saw we had a successful show. I just remember being, and I've talked about this before, but just being so overly, overtly nice and friendly to every single fan as we walked down just to show them that I was not Summer and I'm actually a nice person.
Yeah. I mean, I've always tried to lead with that. And I think what's interesting is so many people say, "God, you're so nice in real life." And so my question is, are people not nice to you? Really? Like, tell me. Like, oh, you have no idea. And people will tell me stories about people that they've met that do a similar job that I do, or
right.
and have not had that same experience. And I don't know how to be another way.
Right.
But I think that's the exact same thing that, like that woman saying how, you know, how's that?
Yeah.
Assuming that she right. would be like that.
Right.
Yeah. No, you guys, I may have grown up there, but I did not grow up in Newport. Although I did meet somebody. This reminded me, because we were talking about the Montage in this episode.
Yeah.
The Montage is a hotel that actually is very near and dear to my heart. I do love the place. It is beautiful.
It is a nice hotel.
And I met you there once. Do you remember that you went and you drove down and because CG and I were at my mom's.
I do remember that. Who was I with though?
With Adam.
Oh.
And I feel like Brett may have been there too.
Probably. Brett Harrison. Yeah. Big funny guy.
But I remember I was actually at a charity event at the Montage, and I remember this guy who was Jimmy, and he said, "I'm Jimmy." He was drunk. He was a money manager. I assume he must have been a criminal, but he was so proud of it and so proud of Jimmy being
That's
Jimmy.
That's cute.
Yeah.
I'm Jimmy.
Yeah. I'm Jimmy. I swear. In real life, I'm Jimmy. But no, I think that it was just that people would assume that you're not nice or something.
Right. Yeah. Thank you so much for all of your voicemails today.
Thank you so much, you guys. And we hopefully you like the look, and we're not remote, and it feels different. It really has a better feeling.
Yeah, we're actually talking to each other, it feels like. Not that we weren't, but it's more talking at each other on the computer.
I admit, I had a hard time hearing things from time to time. And I think that we're just, we
like each other.
Yeah, we do.
But thank you so much for listening. Follow, rate, and review. Welcome to the OC Bitches, wherever you listen to your podcast. If you like to watch us, check it out on YouTube. Or on HBO Max.
Do that. See ya, bitches.
Thanks, everybody. I have to pee. Goodbye. Gotta pee.
Shopify presents cool sheets from AHA to...
I suffered from the wrong kind of hot in bed. Heat-induced insomnia. That was my AHA moment. Bed sheets that keep you cool. Then I thought, how do I even sell bed sheets? That's when I had the idea that made it all possible, signing up on Shopify.
This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a free trial at shopify.com/podcast22. Shopify.com/podcast22.
Hi, everyone. It's Rabia Chaudhry.
And I'm Ellen Marsh.
And we have a new podcast called Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case. As you know, I am a very smart lawyer.
You are. You're so well-respected in the entire world. You know everything.
Thank you so much.
And as you know, I am a famous Broadway star. Gorgeous. I sing like a nightingale.
Well, yes. At least that's what your mom says. Just kidding. This is Ellen Marsh. And
I'm Rabia.
But we are teaming up to bring you a show like you have never heard before.
True crime meets talk show. Nobody's done it. We're going to do it. We're going to do the impossible. And it's the two things that I love. Ellen, I think you'll like it too.
What, true crime and talking?
Yeah.
I'm there. Every other week, we will have a guest talking about whatever true crime case they are obsessed with. We have a list, everything from the Lacey Peterson murder.
Yeah, some of the most famous cases you've ever heard of. Obviously, like JonBenet Ramsey, the West Memphis Three.
Chris Watts, Khalif Browder.
Elisa Lam, Madeleine McCain.
Sandra Bland, the Springfield Three. The list goes on and on. But they are all cases that you know, and we are going to dive in deep with someone else and just talk about them.
No. We're going to solve the case, Ellen.
That's right. We're going to solve the case. So subscribe to Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case wherever you get your podcasts.